Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering the SMU Certificate Program, where you can take courses in art, architecture, history, literature, and more. Registration online at smu.edu/CAPE.
Cities in Texas are growing, not so much out as up and in. This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. After decades of drive-till-you-qualify urban sprawl in the largest Texas metro areas, potential homebuyers and developers eager to serve them are recommitting to city centers and extolling the virtues of walkability. The move in has elevated real estate prices to the extent that the age of first mortgages is creeping up as well, and it has pushed some longtime residents out of rapidly gentrifying neighborhoods. It has also created a kind of vibrancy in Texas cities that feels both old and very new and different. Journalist John Nova Lomax is a senior editor at Texas Monthly Magazine. His article, The Great Texas Housing Boom, is the November cover story. John, welcome to Think.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You live in the Houston Heights area. For people who are not immediately familiar, tell us what it was like the day you moved in 5 years ago and what it's like today.
Well, 5 years ago, it was sort of a tapestry of mixed income, mixed race, lots of older housing stock. And just for the record, I live on the fringe of it in a 1940s development, one block from the Heights proper. But, you know, every day would take me through the actual Heights. But since then, it's... you know, I've seen this on a granular level sort of day by day. It's just gotten less multi-ethnic and less mixed income and more expensive and more modern housing and far less historical. Although it's a very sort of faux historical neighborhood where they're replacing actual old bungalows with four-story townhouses that look like the New Orleans Garden District.
Hmm. What do changes in housing stocks and architecture have to do with changes in the character of the neighborhood?
Well, it's I'm a dedicated bike rider, and it's just not as interesting to me personally to ride my bike around when everyone just sort of seems the same as I am, more or less. Our neighborhood in particular has seen a sort of large influx of well-heeled ONG employees from Louisiana, which is welcome. And, you know, they're bringing in lots of good restaurants, and we're getting a big influx of crawfish houses and things like that, but it's, you know, everybody's just white-collar, and it just, I don't know. I mean, the Heights to me, I grew up on another part of Houston. The Heights was always sort of exotic to me, and when I first moved there, it retained that character that I had been sort of fascinated with as a child, and now it's just changing so fast that it's becoming a lot like a neighborhood like West University Place in Houston, which is very similar to a Park City in Dallas.
There is a lot more residential density in many Texas cities now, meaning more people living closer together. This is something that urban planners have been promoting for a long time as a means of conserving resources and injecting vibrancy. But, of course, that density does not help affordability, and it does not help traffic.
Well, it's certainly not doing so in Houston because we are not doing a good job at all of planning ahead in terms of infrastructure to you know, keep up with this density. You know, the way I look at it is New York's dense, but they've been dense for a long time, and they've planned it for a long time. The same goes for London. But then you have these cities in, you know, places like Brazil where this density just happens too fast. And, you know, it's sort of a crude term I use, but like what's happening in the Heights where they're slamming not just these townhouses, but sort of enormous mid-rise apartment complexes on these narrow streets and stuff, and it's like a favela almost, where you know, and then they go in and tear up the streets because they have to put in new sewage and things like that. And it's just a poorly planned and I, you know, I just wish that they'd had a, more of a blueprint before they just did all this stuff. And it seems different in Dallas than it does in Houston. I have to say that Houston seems to really put the cart before the horse in a way that Dallas might do a better job.
You have a quote from Jim Schutz basically saying he is, I'm paraphrasing here, but like more bullish on the future of the city of Dallas than he ever has been, which as folks around here who read his excellent work know, is an unusual thing to hear from Jim Schutz.
It kind of surprised me. And, you know, here in Houston, we are indoctrinated to, frankly, hate Dallas. But I've got to say that I have to hand it to Dallas. From what I've seen the last 10, 20 years, you're doing a much better job of keeping up with the growth than we are. Now, given that, I'm sure that people up there might say the same about Houston and you know, the grass is always greener, et cetera, et cetera.
When it comes to rising property values, this is good on the one hand if you're already a property owner, but of course your taxes and your expenses are going up all the time as your neighborhood takes off.
It's good, but yeah, and there's the very real bottom line factor of your taxes going up, and if you were in a position to sell but you needed to stay in Texas, where would you go? It's this catch-22 that I think a lot of us are in. You know, there's great deals to be had if you can, you know, swing a move to a place like Wichita Falls or, you know, Texarkana, where those markets are below the American average. But in all of the you know, Texas Triangle cities, things are just spiraling higher and higher, especially Austin. And Dallas is really catching up.
How did it happen that Texas cities began to turn development back inward after so many decades of building out farther and farther from downtowns?
Well, I think that's just a part of a national trend. It's kind of interesting. I grew up in Houston, kind of a old family by Houston standards, meaning my grandparents moved here. But I spent a lot of my childhood in Nashville, and you can read stories about what's going on in Nashville and what's going on in Austin, and just sort of swap the city names out, and it seems like the same thing. You know, they're tearing down old music venues and historic music studios and putting condos and mixed-use developments everywhere and you know, tearing down, you know, restaurants that generations of Nashvillians have eaten at the same way they're doing it with, you know, landmarks in Austin. And, you know, it's the same thing, you know, density, mixed use. Let's, you know, let's bring the kids in. And that's the interesting thing about this whole phenomenon of this density is it seemed to have been marketed initially towards bringing young people back into the city, but that's not been what has happened. What has happened instead is it's mainly 50-something semi-retired or retirees, empty nesters, because they and only they can afford the rents or the mortgages on these places.
So millennials might love to be there, but there's only so many roommates you can get in a two-bedroom condo, and they can't swing the rent.
Right. And you know, we here in Houston, we keep hearing, oh, we're going to put up some affordable housing. And, you know, it's always an afterthought. And the afterthought just keeps getting kicked down the road more and more every year.
I want to make a point, by the way, that you chose the four largest cities in Texas for this particular piece, which just knocks Fort Worth out, which is a pretty close fifth, right behind mm-hmm. Austin in size, still growing very quickly, and in fact, more quickly than Dallas. But that's why mm-hmm. You didn't look specifically at Fort Worth for folks in our broader audience, or Arlington or Plano, for that matter, which are also in the top 10.
Yeah. For the ease, it was an amazingly complex story, and I wish I could have done the Metroplex. To a Houstonian, just seems like this sort of galaxy of suburbs, and you know, orbiting around twin planets. It's bewildering, and I wish I could have spent more time in Fort Worth and sort of because the market is distinct from Dallas for sure.
Mm-hmm. Oil prices, John, are near all-time lows relative to the value of the dollar. What has been the effect on real estate prices in Texas, and specifically in a place like Houston, but also in the other big cities?
It's interesting here in Houston. Real estate boosters are talking like it hasn't had any effect yet, and it may well not have had all that much of one at this time. If you can sort of sift through the statistics, kind of pour through them with a fine-tooth comb, you can see some sort of ominous notes or hear some ominous notes in there. We're really starting to feel it in Midland, Odessa right now. I sort of wish I could have gone up there and checked that place out on the ground. A lot of it has to do also with the fact that there's a lag between a collapse in the price of oil and a collapse, first within the companies as quarterly reports roll in and they start laying people off, and then real estate follows that.
Well, after the bottom fell out last time because of energy in Texas, a lot of people in many parts of the state said we need to further diversify our economy. Does it look like we've done that?
I think Dallas has. I was really astonished at some of the statistics that I read from Dallas, where I think one that I read in the morning news was, they call it, mining and agriculture is the category that O&G jobs technically go under. And it was something like only 0.3% above the national average in Dallas. Whereas Houston, everyone down here says, oh, it's not going to be the same this time because we diversified. And you ask them, how do we diversify? And they say medical. Well, medical has always been big here. And yes, it is bigger than it was in the 80s. But as a percentage of the overall economy, it's about the same or even lower than it was in the 80s. We really haven't added a whole lot of there's not a huge tech sector here, and a lot of what we do have as a tech sector in Houston is a tech sector that's heavily dependent on oil. It just seems like sort of a myth that Houston is diversified, whereas I do see that it's true in Dallas, and Austin and San Antonio have not been as dependent on oil historically as Houston or Midland, and although San Antonio has had a good kick from the fracking boom.
San Antonio is the number two city in Texas by population. What has fueled growth there?
Well, a lot of it's most recently the fracking boom has really kicked them into high gear. But it was when that Toyota plant came in, it really, really electrified the city. And that was mid-2000s. And I saw that firsthand. Just passing through the city once a year to our vacation spot on the Frio. Every time I would go through San Antonio, there would be two new traffic lights, four new traffic lights, six. Here's a new Walmart. Here's a new ATB. There's a whole new subdivision. A lot of companies followed along in the wake of Toyota, but that was the big thing.
My guest is John Nova Lomax, senior editor with Texas Monthly Magazine. He wrote the cover story for the November issue, which is called The Great Texas Housing Boom. If you'd like to weigh in on how development is going on in your community, we'd love to hear from you. We have phone lines open at 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Graduate Liberal Studies Program. You can apply now for spring 2016 to design your own master's or doctoral degree at SMU, specializing in human rights, organizational dynamics, and more. Details at smu.edu/GLS.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with Texas Monthly Magazine senior editor John Nova Lomax. He wrote the cover story for November called The Great Texas Housing Boom. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. I was interested to read in the piece, which is sort of unintentionally a look at the things cities are proudest of and the things cities maybe have a complex about. San Antonio is really big on letting you know that they've got really good restaurants now, as good as Austin or Houston or Dallas.
Yeah. I'm not sure if that's true or not. I do know that my source there is has lived in all those cities, and I have a lot of friends family in San Antonio, and from what I can pick up on social media, just seeing pictures and reading menus, it does look like it's expanded far beyond Chris Madrid's burgers and the litany of Tex-Mex that you can enjoy and you could enjoy there for years and years.
Has San Antonio worked to make itself more that, like, it's been a great tourist destination for a while, but mm-hmm. locals often don't want to go to the Riverwalk or whatever.
They definitely have, and there's sections of the Riverwalk that are sort of newly built that most tourists don't even know about, that they're designed for locals. They've extended it for miles and miles beyond the hotel strip. Central downtown San Antonio is always going to be dominated by tourists, and it'll be interesting to see when they redo the Alamo complex how that affects things, but They're on the fringes of downtown. There's a big Frost Bank is swapping out their property with a city-owned property and moving across downtown, and that's going to anchor a pretty significant mixed-use development that a lot of people in San Antonio are really excited about. Has the potential to double the downtown, year-round population.
I guess Austin, of all the big Texas cities, has had the most success luring folks downtown permanently. Why does that area work for residents who've chosen to live in downtown Austin?
Well, I think first, I think the first draw is the lake. And that enticed a lot of people to move down there. And then after that, of course, came the Whole Foods, and then the Whole Foods just sparked a boom, and that seems to be key for a lot of downtown people who want to live downtown. I saw that it seemed to be duplicated in Uptown Dallas, where you have the Whole Foods there anchoring that neighborhood. There's one going in Midtown Houston, which is very analogous to Uptown Dallas, adjacent to but not in downtown. And that has a lot of people excited in that area. And once the Whole Foods goes in, lots of other retailers come in, and then you have, that's sort of the key is a grocery store. People don't want to live in an area where they have to get in their car. What's the point of living downtown if you have to drive to the grocery store?
Right.
Yeah.
Of course, Austin, as you point out, is known as the Texas city, unlike all other Texas cities. But, for a place with a reputation of being so authentic and so diverse, its downtown has become very, very white and very upper middle class.
Yeah, it certainly has. It's another thing I noticed about Austin is there's this sensibility around town of sort of this sort of arm's length California embrace of Asian culture as filtered through California, where yoga is sort of the most obvious and time-honored tradition in that vein, but also like you see Tibetan prayer places, and they aren't sort of like what you would see in Chinatown in Houston, or Irving, where Dallas has a large Asian population. Mm-hmm. It's sort of I don't know. But that area is just so has become so Californized and white.
So you're saying like the real simple magazine version of whatever these cultures are?
Yes. Yeah, mm-hmm. Kind of. Yeah.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go on the phone to Joe in Dallas. Hi, Joe.
Hi. So I work in downtown in Dallas, and I would love to live downtown. And it seems like there's a lot of redevelopment of older buildings, but it seems like they're all being turned into apartments. And I was wondering what drives that trend of developing apartments instead of like condos and, you know, stuff where, you know, you can build equity. And because I feel like that would kind of strengthen a city center more than just a ton of apartments would. I was just wondering if the speaker could give any insight onto that.
Thanks for your call.
Yeah, I agree. And that's a bit of a mystery to me. Years and years ago, I walked the length of downtown Dallas, and it was just a one Tuesday night, and it was just a void of people. You could have filmed Walking Dead there. And I did it again here this summer, and it was sort of amazing how much life downtown Dallas had, Schutze said, very few of the old buildings have been torn down because of, what was it he said, neglect and asbestos, I think he told me, was what kept Dallas preserved as a sort of fly in amber. But as to your question, I'm not real sure how that works. I should have gotten into that. It's the same trend in Houston, too, where they're mostly rental units and only a few condos, even those condos are fairly expensive.
I wonder about how demographics will affect the trends that we're seeing now, which is, well-heeled people, as you said, in their, 50s, empty nesters sort of repopulating downtowns. They're going to age out at some point. And I wonder about the millennials that right now would love to take their places. Will they actually want to live there once they're ready to start families and need to, drive cars with a third row seat, that sort of thing?
Well, yeah, there's that. And, that's another thing that Austin sort of has an advantage over the other Texas cities is, I'm not sure about the junior highs and the elementary schools, but Austin High School is a very highly esteemed public high school, and that's what you're zoned to in Austin. So that's a consideration for anyone with a family. In Houston, the schools are not that highly rated. I'm not positive about Dallas, but I think you're looking at magnet programs there. San Antonio, it's the same. But, the demographics are going to be interesting. And Gen X is sort of the X card. I'm a Gen Xer, and we're in between. And I would like to live downtown, but, it's just too expensive, and it's impractical for myself with two children, for sure.
Is it really possible in a big Texas city for most people to live without a vehicle? That's always the dream, right? That you get rid of the car, or you put it in permanent storage. How often does that actually happen with people who want to live that way?
It's tough, and you have to pretty much pay a premium for it. And that sort of seems unfair to me. I've done it for a year or two at a stretch here and there, but you have to pay extra. You have to, familiarize yourself with our antiquated bus systems, and be prepared to ride a bike and hump lots of groceries in a backpack and things like that. It's getting more possible, but it's we have a long, long way to go.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Jim is on the line now in Dallas. Hi, Jim.
Hi, thanks. My question was concerning the effect of the DART line in Dallas. It seems to have really had a big effect on creating places that are very dense populations, and a lot of multi-use retail as well. And I was just curious to whether other cities note that, if they are even interested in that sort of transportation.
Thanks for your call.
Well, I can speak for Houston on that, and it really has resurrected the Midtown neighborhood that I was talking about earlier, which is, you know, our equivalent to Uptown, I believe, where, it's the exact same phenomenon. Ours here connects the Medical Center and Reliance Stadium to downtown, and they've since added a few extra lines, but we're a long way behind Dallas on that, where ours really doesn't go to the suburbs at all. But Midtown, when I was growing up here in the 80s, was a, it had been the nicest neighborhood in Houston in the 1930s, and then it was just parking lots and old mansions that had been turned into rooming houses and things even more nefarious than that, and was just falling apart at the seams. And since then, it's become a one of our most vibrant neighborhoods, and the light rail here has really been instrumental in that.
I want to talk about this issue of gentrification, because as you so aptly point out in the piece, it's not always easy to say exactly what it is, exactly when it starts, and exactly when it becomes a problem, right? Because people are excited up to a point about, mm-hmm. you know, money flooding into areas. But then when things change in order to accommodate growth, it can be really problematic for individuals who had found an affordable place to live and are really priced out of the market.
Well, that's just been the story of most of my friends' lives over the last 10 or 15 years. excuse me. I've just seen so many people who settled these neighborhoods, or settled is, you know, a loose term, but who came in when nobody else wanted it and made it into a really cool place, and then they're being displaced and their old houses torn down and, giant condos built on top of where they used to live. I sat back and counted the other day all the places that were sort of instrumental in my personal history in Houston, you know, going back to, where my parents met and where they grew up. And I don't know, about six or eight of them have been torn down and replaced with things that are well beyond our entire family's means at this point. So, I don't know how to stop it, or if you want to stop it, or what. The sad thing in Houston is that, Montrose and the Heights were sort of the twin neighborhoods, were kind of the creative nexus of this city, and the people who've been displaced didn't all just kind of pick one neighborhood to all migrate to and recreate that. They're just scattered to the four winds in this 600 square mile, you know, city. Which, and there's a lot to be said for, you know, the sort of serendipity of these people all living next to each other, you know, like walking down the street, you run into somebody, you go back to their house and write a song, something like that, you know. And that just doesn't seem to be happening as much with, you know, when you have a quarter of the people in the Ship Channel area and a quarter of the people in Pearland and a quarter of the people in Acres Homes, it's just it's kind of a mess.
You know, it's interesting. I wonder, listening to this, because there are so many other cities that we think of as cooler than anything in Texas, right? You know,
right.
New York. And they're complaining about the same concerns there, that gentrification, that, you know, neighborhoods are victims of their own success, and the people who made them cool in the first place are then kind of edged out. Is this inevitable?
It certainly seems that way. Although, you know, I wrote at the end of my piece about a group here called Avenue CDC that, has all these sort of safeguards against gentrification. But, you know, and this is nothing against them, but their efforts are seem almost like little Potemkin villages, against this tide of just unbridled capitalism that we embrace here in Texas, for better or worse. And, And again, I guess it's not just Texas. I mean, as you said, you know, it's happening. I mean, San Francisco is the worst, and you know, that's the most liberal city in America. You know, so I really just don't know what the solution is. You know, maybe Google cars and better transport. You know, I'm semi-joking about that, but, you know, once maybe we don't all have to drive everywhere, or, you know, we can just, you know, program our car to take us places, and it won't matter so much where we live, how far from the city.
Shuttle around in our autonomous little pods.
Right.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We have David waiting on the line in Dallas. Hey, David.
Hi there. I'm very curious about your guest's opinion or prediction of the next great Texas city. Is there a city that's maybe smaller than Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, or Austin that's growing and might be the next place where it's at?
That's interesting. Somebody the other day was really talking up Temple, of all places. And, you know, situated where it is on that I-35 corridor, or, you know, near enough, that could be one. I can't really. Corpus has always been a really underachieving city, you know, and people can't figure out what makes it so sleepy and just forever. You know, it's situated in a very beautiful setting on that bay, but it never seems to really catch up. And I don't know enough about El Paso to say, but. Yeah, that's a good question, but there's a person I trust was saying that Temple seemed to be on the rise.
All right. John Nova Lomax is my guest. He's senior editor with Texas Monthly Magazine and wrote the cover story for the November issue, which is on newsstands, obviously, because it is November. The piece is called The Great Texas Housing Boom. If you'd like to join our conversation, call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Graduate Liberal Studies Program. You can apply now for spring 2016 to design your own master's or doctoral degree at SMU, a customizable evening graduate program for working professionals. More at smu.edu/GLS.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with Texas Monthly's John Nova Lomax, whose cover story in the November issue is called The Great Texas Housing Boom. You can join us by emailing think@kera.org. That's where we hear from Pam in downtown Plano, who says, I love living here. We're blessed with transit, great public spaces, and a variety of housing types. But I do agree the cost of newer developments are pricing out younger and more diverse residents. There are just so many old single-family money pits in these central neighborhoods, and developers can only be induced to participate by the promise of high returns, read apartments. What creative middle ground alternatives are there for providing more residential options? You note in the piece, John, that not a lot of people are in the affordable housing game anymore.
Yeah, that's a real crisis, and it's not just in Texas. Again, this is a nationwide trend that you know, we tend to focus on our own backyards. But you know, I read some articles in some national journals by you know, builders that the cost of land nationwide, or at least, you know, very desirable land, has skyrocketed. And there's everywhere you go, there's shortages of labor, material, and then local governments are you know, coming in with their hands out, asking for higher and higher fees. It's a sort of a quadruple or even quintuple whammy with just everything conspiring to the point where, you know, builders will tell you that they can't build a house, you know, just per unit and make any money for less than $300,000, which is not entry level by any stretch of the imagination. And you know, I talked to people in Dallas who said, if you're making the average income and you're married, you know, now you have to be looking at suburban Waxahachie to get into, you know, a house for, you know, less than $200,000, unless, you know, you're willing to be a urban pioneer, you know, in some kind of scenario like that.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Safish on the line in Plano. Hi, Safish.
Hello. My question is kind of related to the previous one. I live in the Dallas Metroplex. Why are the builders not building sub 2,000 square foot homes anymore? We see like everything is over 3,000, 4,000 square foot. Are the builders not getting enough incentives for building sub 2,000 homes? Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Yeah, it's sort of the same issue. And you know, I think some of them are starting to readjust and, you know, and investigate ways that they can do that. One of the other problems is that there's this belief, and, you know, I don't know how fair this is, but there's a belief among builders that a lot of younger buyers are sort of spoiled by fancy dorms in college.
Wow.
And so, you know, when they hit the housing market, they're looking at these places and they expect, you know, luxury finishes and things like that that are just not cost effective for builders. And they also expect more space than older buyers might be comfortable with. You know, they graduate from college and then they get a roommate and then they go into these luxury apartment complexes and then they hit the housing market and they're looking at, you know, a 1970s house in, say, you know, Richardson with shag carpet and wood paneling and you know, and that might, they might be able to afford that house, but then they start factoring in how much it would cost to bring it up to their the standards that they're accustomed to. And it suddenly doesn't seem as cost effective. And you know, it, speaking to the caller's point about the size, it's just that they can't get as much money for it. But you know what they're doing is they're building houses that might be sided with you know, they'll just have brick on the front and then, you know, siding. They'll have a brick facade and then siding around the other three sides of the house, or you know, they'll use more artificial materials in the kitchen. The appliances won't be as fancy, things like that.
Back to the phones now. We have Brandon on the line in Irving. Hello, Brandon.
Hi. My question is about the DART rail. And I have on several occasions wanted to take my family into Dallas using the rail system out here. But I run into a problem, which is that the rail stations are half a mile or a mile from my home. But it's a little bit too far for me to walk with my four-year-old and six-year-old. And the rail stations have absolutely no parking at all. So the only way to get there that I can tell is if I lived in the apartments by the rail station or if I walked or biked there. So it, as a way to sort of drive from my home to the station and then take the train into Dallas, it's not possible.
That's a really interesting challenge, Brandon, and one that I would imagine that cities that are trying to focus more on transportation, public transportation options, are having to grapple with. Do you know anything about that, John?
Yeah, I really feel the caller's pain there because, you know, like there was a time where I sort of lived that. And, you know, in Houston for a long time, they've really been grappling with the problem of how to let people connect to transit with bicycles. And now the buses have they have the capacity to carry two bicycles apiece, which is sort of laughably small. But like at rush hour, you're not allowed to bring your bike onto our light rail, you know, morning or evening. And if you're with a family, you know, that's not even really an option either. And I just really hope that in the future that we'll figure out some ways to sort of, you know, fill in the cracks of our you know, of what's at this point we could say that our mass transit is looking better, but it has such a long way to go.
Back to the phones now. We have Sonia on the line in Fort Worth. Hi, Sonia.
Hey, Chris. How are you? Thank you.
Very well. Go right ahead, please. Hi.
No, I just wanted to say that I think Mr. Womack touched on something when speaking about gentrification, but I think it's a point of view and attitude that I have to work with in my life, and I think it's broader than construction in neighborhoods and affordable housing. For gentrification, I myself don't know if there are many cities, urban or otherwise, where the building is for folks of many different incomes. I don't think that tends to be the case for a variety of reasons. I think then one gets into culture, context, race, any number of things that contribute to the complexity of our getting along. But I think unless we can contribute to changing the mindset that we would do better living together, meaning mixed income, race, culture. And again, I think that cuts across our lives in every other aspect of them. I remember years ago, though, I think Arlington, Texas still does not have public transportation, but I asked someone at a public forum, was I correct, that at a meeting someone stood up and said, we don't want buses here because we don't want them in our neighborhoods. And I think there's some application of that, too, when we speak of this general topic. Thank you.
Thanks so much for your call, Sonia. I appreciate it. Anything you want to touch base on there, John?
Yeah, that's been a problem in a lot of cities that I know. I know certain neighborhoods in Atlanta tried to opt out of Atlanta Rail on that same for that same reason, and you know we've had that in Houston too, where they wanted to connect the Galleria to downtown via light rail, which makes all the sense in the world. But there was a whole lot of opposition, a lot of it backed by former Congressman DeLay and current Congressman Culberson to, you know, kill that project based on just sort of fear of the other. And it's sad and, you know, I don't know. Based on last night's vote in Houston, I don't know what's to be done about that kind of thing. The HERO ordinance, but, you know.
Well, we have an email here from Tana in Magnolia, and she says, I'm wondering if you could comment on the string of towns out 290 and Highway 249 from Houston. They all seem to be attracting a lot of new businesses, industry, and, of course, housing and people. I'm wondering about any information you have about these small cities like ours, Magnolia, in the future utilizing their historic train stations as commuter stations and what you might know about that.
It's a phenomenal idea. It's been bandied about a whole lot. And, you know, 290 commuter rail has been, you know, it's one of the most needed corridors in Houston for sure. Right now, Cypress is sort of the dominant area out there, and Cypress is sort of the most poorly planned suburb in the Houston area, in my opinion. It just sort of sprawls and sprawls, there's no real center to it. They, you know, there's not a, you know, one of these new town centers. There's nothing like that in Cypress yet, but should commuter rail go through there, it would be a huge boon to the entire Houston area because they really need it. And 290, I've seen it referred to as just a daily natural disaster. It's a really, really tough freeway.
Do you think some of the challenges in Houston, and I don't want to be all down on Houston by any means, but everybody talks about the fact that Houston has very few laws affecting zoning. Do you think that the city is now really feeling the effects of this?
Well, we always have, and we never do anything about it. There's an ingrained belief here that continues even 25 years after the fall of the Berlin Wall that zoning is a communist plot. and I'm really not even joking about that. But, everybody just sort of wrings their hands about it, and nothing's ever quite done. It just would take a tremendous Herculean feat to bring it in at this point. And, I've talked to smart developers who say it's a good thing, and, developers who I respect who are doing wonderful things for the city because they can't quite recall their reasoning on that. But, in some instances, it's worked out in our favor. One of these developments on the light rail in Midtown is by an anti-zoning developer, and he's actually building affordable housing for millennials in the heart of the city, and it's anchored by nightclubs and mom and pop shops. It's everything that you see in sort of idealized Austin, and he's doing that. And, he believes that he's able to do that because there is no zoning. Hmm. On the other hand, what you see sort of writ large across the entire Houston community is just sort of disjointed and, pell-mell development and destruction of old neighborhoods and, things that just don't jibe well together.
So imagine an old college buddy was moving to Texas from, Minnesota and asked for guidance. They have to live somewhere in Texas and want your advice. What would you tell them?
Oh, well, that's a tough one. Depends on what they're looking for. I guess I'm highest on San Antonio right now. Just because it seems to be the best bargain, and speaking from my personal point of view, I enjoy the history and the culture and the access to the cheaper access to the hill country that you get there than you would get in Austin, certainly. And, it's reasonably close to Port Aransas. Like we spoke of earlier, the dining scene's picking up and it's not quite as touristy and sleepy as it once was. But yeah, I really think that, another caller asked about, a city off the radar that might be on the come up. But I would say that of the four cities, or the five cities that are already well known, I think San Antonio has the most forward momentum.
John Nova Lomax is senior editor at Texas Monthly Magazine. His article, The Great Texas Housing Boom, is the cover story this month. John, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for making this time for us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is associate producer with help on the phones today from Lauren Aguirre. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. I'm on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think. The show's email address is think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.